Instructions for living a life. Pay attention. Be astonished. Talk about it. That's poet Mary Oliver, and this is Everyday Wonder, a podcast where we turn down the volume on all the shouting that's going on these days so we can talk about the things that really matter. And I am here with my co-host, Renee Peck.
Hello, Brett Will.
And today we are here with one of our favorite regular guests, the always fabulous Pam Roberts.
Hello.
And thank you for being here. And today this is, I think, going to be kind of fun. And this is certainly a show that resonates with our forever guest, the city of New Orleans, because today we're going to talk about masks and their power to reveal and conceal, how they both protect us from spirits but evoke spirits, how masks are about play and ritual. And so in essence, this show is saying, when you put on a mask to hide who you are, do you actually learn more of who you are? And Renee, I'm going to ask you to kick it off because I know part of your interest in masks is that we put this physical thing over the most recognizable part of our body, which is our face.
Yeah, masks are interesting. And of course, it's no surprise that masks go back millennia and that masks are part of the earliest civilizations. But Halloween is when people wear masks mostly in this country. Here in New Orleans, that's not entirely true because Mardi Gras is also a masking holiday and we wear masks every day.
So it's going to the gas station for some people.
Right. And but wearing masks here is a fact of life. Traditionally, people wore masks on Halloween to protect themselves from the bad spirits that roamed the earth that night. And the importance or the focus of that is that masks were worn as protection.
Yep.
We wear surgical masks. After Katrina, we wore face masks to help us breathe. So mask as protection was maybe the origin of this idea. But what interests me a lot more is masks that are tied more to identity, tied more to what we're showing the world, what we're hiding from the world. And I know, Pam, as an actress, comedy tragedy masks are the icon of your industry. Why is that?
When looking at the comedy tragedy mask in Greek chorus and Greek theater, you, as a chorus, would hang out in the back traditionally, and then you would step forward as your character, and you would place on the comedy mask, and then you would give your comedic comment on the action that's happening on stage, because like 90% of all Greek theater is satire, right? So you would put on your mask, you would step forward, you would present your case or present your lines, and then you would step back into the chorus, therefore kind of going back into just the ensemble or the background of the piece. And then when you had to create tragedy or you had to bring tragedy, you would then step out of the chorus, put on that specific mask. So the audience knew what they were going to get.
Right. So a mask is, in what you've just told, masks are personification of emotion.
Yes, definitely.
And they are also visual cues.
Yes. And interesting enough, sometimes there you would wear a mask and not say a thing. Like your mask
Spoke for you
in like with your physical movements. And that's more of like a dance. Dancing with masks is a whole nother story. But if you would put on a tragic mask or like a sad mask or a very like frowny mask, you would become very downtrodden physically, right? And if you were a jovial character and you had on a happy mask, you were lighter.
But mask in theater, and I think of kabuki and I think of other aspects of theater that use masks are using to portray character, emotion, storyline, whatever. So masks in that instance are used to reveal who you are.
Oh, yeah. Yes, definitely, definitely. Yeah. Reveal and enhance, right, your...
Well, and also cue the... I mean, you're saying to people, this is going to be funny. This
yes,
is going to be sad.
Yes.
This is going to be dangerous. Masks are make-believe. You're taking people into a place of make-believe, and maybe those cues help folks know whether they want to take that journey or not.
Yes.
But that's the aspect of the masks as the personification of emotions. And God knows, as a man, we all need help with that because sometimes we struggle to express our emotions.
Yeah, it's like the old school trigger warning.
Yeah, right. Well, and Renee, I know you've talked about in Venice and New Orleans how masks sometimes allowed you.
Well, that's the mask. This is masks to reveal if you're funny, if you're tragic, whatever. But masks historically have been used to conceal. And when masks conceal, it's to hide what you're doing or who you are. And the what you're doing is easy. In Venice, people would put on masks so that they could go have illicit affairs or kiss people at the ball that they weren't supposed to. You can act out in a mask in a way. I know that, Bourbon Street has a reputation of people masking and then having outrageous behavior that then they don't have to deal with or admit or whatever the next day.
That's before social media.
Before social media, that's right. Girls gone wild. But I do think that that masks came to conceal as well as reveal. And I think that masks still do both today. And I don't know if masks are better used or more often used to tell people who you are, or if people tend to use them to hide who they are.
And I think people do both, and I think we need to do both. So what we've talked about is the personal aspect of masks. You know, from a shaman world, masks evoke. And so if you wear a mask, and this is certainly true in Africa, this is true in the Amazon, this is true all over the world, where shamans in ceremonies, you put on a mask and you're putting it on the mask to evoke a certain spirit. And it's a two-way conversation. And actually always before you put on a mask, you first, before a ceremony, you think what spirit wants to come through. Sometimes it's easy. It's a funeral ceremony. So whoever's in the box is whoever is going to come through you. Sometimes it's just, you know, the ceremony's coming up and you're like, okay, who wants to say something? And it's an eagle, or it's a bear, or it's a serpent, or it's the wind. And you create that mask as a vehicle, or as a clue, rather, or as a representation for that spirit to communicate. And then you yourself become what we call the hollow bone that spirit comes through. So it's very much like what you see in cartoons. In shaman world or in mystical world, when you put on that mask, it's like your entire being changes. You're not hiding your being, you're transforming your being.
Oh, it's transformative.
Right, because you're not you. You're not even there. It's this being is coming through. And I think that's fascinating to me because, as you mentioned, Renee, you know, Halloween started because we were trying to conceal ourselves from the spirits.
Right.
And you use soot and all that, so you smelled dead. You didn't smell like something the spirits would want. But you also covered yourself up so they wouldn't know who you are, and they would pass you by. And again, in the shaman world, you're asking those spirits to come forward. And it's interesting because when you do that, in theory or in myth or in wonder, you don't know what the spirits are going to bring. I've been in some ceremonies where it gets ugly fast, because the spirits don't necessarily like to be evoked, so they don't do nice things. And I'm fascinated by the way that some of us see the danger of masks, or that masks feel dangerous. When I was getting ready for this episode and I Googled masks, the first 15 things that came up were Halloween safety tips. And
really?
So, yeah, and I'm like, really? I'm like, not even candy corn first?
Well.
You know, thank God cultural appropriation didn't come up. But, safety tips. And so I wonder if there is a part of us, and actually speaking personally, all the years I lived in Boston, I would never have worn a mask. I was afraid of masks. And I was afraid because I had my own persona that I had created. I didn't want people to know it was a persona. So I think there was a part of me that wondered if I put on a mask, would people see the persona? And New Orleans broke me of that.
Well, I do think that it's different here in New Orleans. My grandson has a basket full of masks. He has wrestling masks I've brought him from Mexico. He has superhero masks. He has masks he's made at school. And we'll go over there and he'll pull one out and run around and play and be that character. And I think in New Orleans, we also have costume closets and we have baskets of masks as adults. And it's, you know, I walked into the coffee shop one day and saw two Elvises sitting there having coffee. Here, we do it every day. And I think part of it is because we live in the moment here and we are willing to escape from the reality of everyday life the way maybe people in New York and Boston don't, because they're too serious and too grown up. But wearing a mask brings the child out in us. That's what I see. I think it gets us back to that time when we could play act. And Pam, you're an actress. I mean, that's what people like. They like the fantasy. They like to go to the theater because the people up there in metaphorical or real masks are living out a creative fantasy that they can participate in.
Yes. Well, it's funny you mentioning your grandson. I am a theater teacher for kids in the summer, and we do a class where we'll watch like the BBC Life, and then all of the children will make masks out of like simple cut paper plates and like construction paper. But once those masks are done, and once they put those masks on, and then you just put on music, there are some kids who become these beautiful flying around birds. And this year, particularly, I had one kid who just sat down and I was like, well, what are you doing? And she was the mama bird sitting on her nest of eggs.
And did she have her mask on?
She had her mask on.
But see that?
And that was her choice.
And that's what you talk about, masks being dangerous or not transformative through mysticism in your woo-woo world. In our more real, grounded, non-woo-woo world, I think that we love the transformation power of masks in a safe way. And that is, it brings out the child in us. It lets us be somebody that we're not. And I think the difference between New Orleans and a lot of other places is that we do that as grown-ups.
Yes.
Well, and I think, you know, there's so much to unpack here from the last couple of minutes. So one, let's go back to the mama bird.
Yeah.
And she has her mask on.
Yes.
Or Renee, your grandson, as the wrestler. What does the mask bring to the element of play? Does it make the play more intense? Because kids play without masks. So when you put on a mask, what does that do to play?
I think it hides them in a way, and it enhances the vision that they have for whatever character or person that they're embodying. Does that make sense?
No, that totally makes sense.
Well, I think, yes, I think that the mask is liberating.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
there we go.
There we go. Thank you.
It allows you to be someone you're not. It allows you to become someone you weren't a minute ago. And I think as adults, we need that.
Oh, I think we do. And I think liberating is so cool. But I think the mask gives you a clue and you're wearing it. So as a child or as an adult, if you want to be a Tyrannosaurus Rex, any of us could get up and run around and all that. But if you've got a mask on of a Tyrannosaurus Rex, I think it's a container. I think in a way it creates a container to focus us. In underscoring or highlighting the word play, there was a book by a Dutch writer whose name I'm going to totally butcher here, Johan Huizinga. All right, Johan Huizinga, who wrote a book in 1938, and he called it Homo Ludens. And Ludens has some tie to play. Renee is making a unmasked grimace at me. But the purpose of the book was that play is essential for culture.
Oh,
that you
no
have
doubt.
To play.
That's how kids learn. That's how we all learn. We learn through play.
So what does that mean to you? Because you're pretty emphatic in saying
to
that.
To me, we learn through role-playing, and we learn through testing our limits. Like when you play, if you're running around, playing, yes, and you come across something, you're going to play and test those limits. Like if you're on the border of something or you come to a tree, running up a tree as an adult is dangerous. Running up a tree as a kid is playful.
Right. And see, that's what I was going to get to when you talk about safety versus play. Because to me, when I say the danger of a mask, so old-time serious Brett Will Taylor, the politician, is going to put on a Tyrannosaurus Rex mask and be a Tyrannosaurus Rex. And revealing that maybe I'm really good at being Tyrannosaurus Rex, is that dangerous to my identity? You see what I mean?
It could be threatening.
There we go. Maybe that's the better word.
I don't
word.
Think it's dangerous. And I think a lot of us can't let go of the ego long enough to be something that we think society is going to judge us
and
illly
that's what
for.
New Orleans, I think, teaches at least someone, an outsider like me.
Right. And I think that play aspect or whatever you want to call it, you know, as an actress, I know Pam is comfortable being someone she's not probably in any situation.
More than being who I am in front of people.
Right.
Ooh, that's going to be our next episode.
Flat out.
But you don't need the mask. Some of us perhaps do need the mask in order to try out things or do things or act things that we wouldn't in everyday life. It lessens our inhibitions, I think a mask does.
Awesome. That's exactly right. It's not danger, it's threatening.
Threatening.
Perfect.
You know, I think the propensity to mask is about more than just the physical mask. I think we like to have our faces painted. We like to get in costume. We like to adopt these personas that are not ours or not reality. I was in London this summer, and I saw everybody's asking about Jane. Everyone's asking about Jamie, and the star was Roy Halock. Roy is from New Orleans. He's a great guy. I love him. I knew him at Nord Theater, and he has become a very well-known drag queen named Bianca Del Rio, and he starred in this play. And the play opens with him, or when he first appears in the play, he is this sort of nondescript, down and out, losing his business, running a junk shop, 40-something guy. Later in the play, he comes on as Bianca Del Rio, and he is larger than life. The audience starts cheering and clapping, and that becomes who he is. So then the question is Bianca Del Rio the real person, or is Roy the real person? And both are, obviously, but the costume, the mask, the persona that we give to people can sometimes make us so much more than we are in everyday life.
And oh, I think that's right. I mean, RuPaul, who hosts RuPaul's drag show, because who else but RuPaul would host a show called RuPaul's Drag Show?
Which Bianca Del Rio won.
Well, I was just going to say, that's what I was going to say at the time. But, you know, RuPaul is famous for saying everything is drag. And Ryan Murphy has a show right now called Pose, and it is on the voguing culture of the 80s, and that was this idea that as gay men, you mask your true identity in ways that people don't see the mask all day, and at night, you put on a mask that actually shows who you are. And I think that's worth talking about. So, Renee, you know, it's funny. You've lived in New Orleans for 40 years?
40, years? Whatever. Okay.
And so I think when you say when choosing a mask, you have 40 years of history that informs that. Pam and I are still relative newcomers here. And I think what's interesting is when you're not from a place like New Orleans, that, again, people mask all the time, choosing a mask usually means choosing a mask that someone else has made. So you are going to choose a mask that you're going to buy, right?
Yes,
so you're gonna choose to be a Tyrannosaurus Rex, and you're gonna go to some store and buy a Tyrannosaurus Rex mask. What I find fascinating about New Orleans is when someone like Renee Peck says, when you're choosing a mask, part of that often means when you're choosing to make a mask. There's a journey here that's very shamanic, which is, you know, New Orleanians do not. A week before Halloween or a week before Mardi Gras, we don't decide then. We start talking months in advance, and there's parties that are all about, what are you going to be?
Right.
And I remember when I first moved here, I was horrified because I thought you just went to a store and you bought a mask. And my friend Kate said, I just create a mask that makes me feel pretty. And I think, you know, Renee, is there something unique in New Orleans that so many of us make our
masks?
Well,
I do think that there is a lot of creativity and artistry in New Orleans fantasy that inspires people to make their own masks. My favorite mask is one that's a very traditional mask. It's a very conventional, only the upper half of the face mask, but it's hand-painted with irises. And it was given to me by the Iris Organization, which I ride in at Mardi Gras, and I like it because it's this very traditional mask with a very inspirational and beautiful and free-flowing painting of irises on it. So it's sort of like wearing a piece of art on my face. So yes, that expresses something about me. I'm not crafty. Cree McCree, my friend who is the ultimate costumer in New Orleans, makes these massive headdresses and feathers
That's
and all this kind
Kate
of stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm not talented enough to do that. Probably Pam could do that. So I think that when we...
Do you use face paint ever? Do you paint your face?
Okay, I do.
So what about that?
Well, there's YouTube now. So you get on YouTube and
But again, I think a lot... But I think this is so natural to you after 40 years in New Orleans. And a lot of other people would be like, well, face paint, I'm going to go somewhere and have it done.
But I think that when I was the home and garden editor at the Times-Picayune, maybe the most popular story that I ran or the one that got the most requests for repeat was my recipe for fake blood.
Can we link to that
syrup,
on today's the episode?
And so everybody wanted to go out and do it. So I think there is a certain artistry that people call upon or evoke when they make masks. But I think the more important question is, why do we choose the masks we do?
Right.
And I think that even if you go to a wall where someone has made a mask and what you choose, I think it says something about you. And if you look online or if you research it, you'll find that what you choose to be for Halloween says something about you. Supposedly, if you choose to be a black cat, it's because you want to be sexy. If you choose to be a rabbit, it's because you're introspective. But that whatever you choose, even if you know it or not, is informed by who you are. There was a really scary article in Thrillist in 2016. And the focus of the article was that Halloween mask sales can predict elections. And
what?
It
what
said,
do we need to do?
And, and
which ones am I buying?
It said that over the past five elections, that the candidate whose mask was sold the most for Halloween ultimately won. And in 2016, before the 2016 election, Trump masks were running 55% to 45% ahead of Hillary masks.
Right. So everyone who buys a Trump mask because they hate Trump, stop.
Right. It is it is counterintuitive in
help
that
us
way.
Help you.
But the idea being that we express what we believe and who we are and our personality and our attitude by whichever mask we choose. And of course, if you go to the other end of that spectrum, you've got the KKK masks and
absolutely.
You've got the Guy Fawkes mask that Anonymous, the hackers wear. And so you identify very negative things with masks. You know, it can go both ways.
What's so cool about what you're talking about, and especially when you talk about the Anonymous mask, is those masks, again, personify universal emotions. And the shaman in me can't help but think that the wonder of masking is, while we all take pride in a unique, what feels to us a unique mask, there's only so many emotions. The nuance may be in how we experience them individually, but there's only so many emotions. So every time that kid becomes the wrestler or the bird, you are tapping into millennia of play evoking those emotions, those animals. And maybe that's part of why masking is so rich in New Orleans, because we do it so much. There's a fragrance to it. There's something to it. So Pam, Renee's favorite mask is a half mask with hand-painted irises. What's your favorite?
I'd have to say my favorite mask after much thinking is several years ago, I ran away and joined a tall ship theater circus. It's a very long story. But I was one of the vocalists. The mask that I wore, it started at my forehead and then like ended kind of like at my cheeks because I had to sing, be able to sing. But it was this beautiful maroon and bronze and gold mask with like fringe eyelashes on the bottom. And it had two little antenna. Oh, and the eyes were enhanced with leather that was also painted a really cool copper glitter. But it was just this mask that two women sat down and worked on. And I got to discuss with them, like, what would work, how to cut the eye holes out, and, like, what color I thought my character would want to wear. By far my favorite mask. And it sits in a shoebox at my parents' house because I still feel like I'm too old to own it.
You should hang it on the wall. You know, this reminds me of the mask market every Mardi Gras in New Orleans. And at that mask market, they have artists come from all over and they have different kinds of masks. And some are African in nature, some are Venetian in nature, some are complete fantasy creations of leather and beads and feathers. And I think that it is a manifestation of human creativity and human spirit and magic and transformation. And I think, to me, that's what's important about a mask. I like to believe that masks enable us to be more than we are without it, rather than less. I know if you Googled masking and got lots of Halloween safety tips. I Googled masking and I get a lot of masking as a sociological phenomenon where you have to present a facade to the world that's not who you truly are and that it creates a falseness. But real masks can be that way too. They can either augment who you are or conceal a deep, dark secret. In Harry Potter, you know, the mask was the one that hid he who shall not be named. And it was, you know, you hide behind the invisibility cloak, allowed you to sneak into places you couldn't go. And I think we're fascinated by that concept. I think that we're fascinated by what it does for us and what it does for other people that we meet and see.
Well, I think we're fascinated by who we are that we don't see. And I think we're fascinated, whether we cognitively realize it or not, I think all of us are fascinated by the shared experience of being alive. And I think masks touch on that. For the everyday listener of Everyday Wonder, what should they do about masks?
Well, I think... Go get one.
get yourself a mask.
Go get yourself a mask. I think all of us have experiences with masks from our childhoods and from our children. And all I would say is to try masking or costuming in order to liberate or free up that part of you, that child part of you that so often does not get out. But it's some people are going to be too inhibited to do that or not inclined to do that. But we're talking about everyday wonder, and we're talking about ways that we can find everyday wonder. And I think that one of the ways we can do that is by expanding who we are. And one way we can expand who we are is by playing dress up.
And I think on that note, we'll go try on some masks. We have a couple masks on the table, actually. We'll go have some wine and try some on. And meanwhile, you listeners can get back to your lives, masked or unmasked. And Pam, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
New Orleans, as always, thanks for inspiration and joy. Renee,
thank you. Nice being here. Thank you so much.
And thank you, listeners. We'll talk to you next week.
There's no other place that I'd rather be. That puts a smile on my face. The world.